Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Stripped by Sia, your podcast for strippers, sex workers, and all the fancy naked people in between. I'm your host, Steph Sia, aka Kimchi on stage, aka Sia on camera online, coming at you from Vancouver, Canada. If you are new here, if you're just popping in, this show is all about destigmatizing sex work. And I myself am a sex worker. I've been a sex worker for over a decade now, doing all various sorts of the work, dipping my toes, and as you might have guessed it, in dancing. I'm also an active cam model as well. I've done some fetish work, some in-person work, lots and lots of experience here. But I'm not here to talk about myself. I'm here to tell the stories of sex workers and also to help destigmatize that by humanizing them through education, telling their stories, sharing their lived experiences, and all that fun stuff. So we do bring different guests from different corners of the industry, whether they're from nonprofit organizations, maybe they're on-screen talent, maybe they're directors or people behind the scenes. I really try to bring different guests on every single week, so it really paints a really active and accurate portrayal of what sex work is. So I know that a lot of you are listening to this as a resource, but also just to learn more about the industry, familiarize yourself, and also just, as I mentioned, humanize the work of sex workers. So this week is no different. We will be getting to that. We're going to be talking about peep shows, specifically Ruby's pop-up peep show, but you're going to have to stay tuned because I just got to go through all of my spiel and all the things I need to say to my lovely Patreon subscribers. If you want to fast forward to the 5-minute mark, that's where you got to go to start listening to the episode. But I just want to say hello to those who are on my Patreon. My Patreon was created a few years ago because some people were just like, hey, I really love all of the information that you're giving us. It's so accessible. It's free. Like, where can I donate to? I started Patreon just for that. So if you want to financially donate to the show, you can do that by becoming a patron. It's patreon.com/strippedbysia with tiers starting for as low as $4 a month, and that can get you some access to some sneak peeks of the episodes, who I'm planning to bring on, different episodes, topics, and themes. If you do decide to go in the second and third tier, you also get access to all of the video exclusive content that's on there. So getting the episodes early before anyone else, and also just getting all the fun, raw, uncut footage that you don't get to see on the internet. So if you want to do that, you can go ahead. Again, it's patreon.com/strippedbysia. And if you are wondering where that money goes, it goes towards hosting my website, because that is not free. And also for me to attend any adult industry related events like Expos, the AVNs, Exotica, and other events that are kind of around North America. I probably won't be at any more events this year, kind of taking a back seat for that stuff, but who knows, never say never. You might see me at an event later on at the second half of the year, but we shall see how the funds are doing at that time. But yes, again, if you want to check it out, again, patreon.com/strippedbysia if you haven't heard the first couple times I said that. Also, a quick reminder too, if you haven't listened to the show for a while, I'd love to get your review, either a 5-star review or like whatever honest review you want to give on whatever listening and streaming platform you're on. That really does help with people discovering the show, accessing the show. The more people know about it, the more people can spread all the good information that's on the show. So please, 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 if you're on Spotify or Apple, please rate 5 stars. And of course, if you have time to write a review, I'd love that. It takes a second to do, and it really does help support the show in a non-financial way, which is a huge, huge, huge help. So enough of me talking. As I have mentioned, I'm very excited about today's topic. This is all about Ruby's pop-up peep show, also Ruby's Entertainment in general, which we'll get into very, very shortly. We have the owner of Ruby's here, Ruby herself is in the house today. We're going to be talking about peep shows. And you know how, you know, it's been a while since I've had an episode on peep shows. If you want to go back, I believe it was season 3 with Sunshine McWade, talking about the disappearance of peep shows, where that has gone. So that adds, that's actually a really good episode to listen to before. Just Google, type in the search bar Sunshine McWade. You could kind of listen to that episode before listening to this. But if not, we are going to go over some brief history and things to do with peep shows, because this is a new iteration of peep shows, and I'm really, really excited to have connected with Ruby at a recent conference in the fall that happened last year. And I was like, what the heck is this? This is so awesome. I got to like actually witness and experience the peep show itself as well. So enough of me talking. Ruby's patiently waiting. Ruby, are you there?
Hi, I'm here and so grateful to be here, Sia. Thanks.
So excited to have you. And I just like cannot wait to kind of tell the audience more about your business, but also like your own stint in the world of sex, but also just to really support and just hear about this really unique business concept. And also just, you know, I'm here for the peep show comeback. If there is one, then yes, rock on. I really would love to see this, because it's, as we mentioned before, kind of maybe a dying breed. But before we get into all of that, please tell the audience a little bit about yourself, who you are, wherever you want to start, and then we can kind of go from there and start at the very beginning, maybe.
Okay. The beginning of a very long road. I'm Ruby. I believe that sex work is a noble calling. I have been adjacent to sex work for many years, and then have also worked in the trade myself. I work at a nonprofit here on Vancouver Island called Peers Victoria Resources Society. And so we've been supporting sex workers where they're at with non-judgmental service and harm reduction and different programming that supports all aspects of sex work. And most importantly, not just exiting sex work, but really supporting sex workers where they're at. So Pierce has been supporting sex workers since 1996, and I've been there for 10 years. But to go back, I'm a bit of a diehard feminist, yes. But a sex positive feminist, and a one that understands that sex work and feminism actually have a really complementary relationship. I come from a very working class, working poor family, and had experienced some sexual violence in my inner circles when I was younger, and really wanted to kind of understand oppression, sexual violence, and I saw feminism as an avenue to do so. I wanted to take a degree in like gender studies, but I remember back then, everyone was like, well, what are you ever going to do with that? What are you really going to do with that, though? And I started doing social work stuff. And but I had this one incident. It was like, really, it's not a huge deal, but it is the catalyst that brought me to feminism and like really to officialize feminism, because I did end up going and getting a degree at the university, but which I was really proud of, because I did end up making a living, yes, off of it. I've since paid back my student loans, and I'm the only person in my family who has been higher educated. Yes. Not to like downplay any of my family, but just that it was like a really hard struggle to actually make the choice to take gender mm-hmm. studies. But I was working at a restaurant in Europe, and I was working at the Hard Rock Cafe, and we would always go out for drinks after work. And I was wearing like a skirt one night, and this guy, I felt like a gust of wind behind me, and I turned around, and like a guy had lifted up my skirt, and him and his friend were laughing, and he was like an older guy, and I just thought, fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
no kidding.
I'm actually gonna go to school. That was the reason when I was like, I'm going back home, I'm gonna take this degree, I don't care how long it takes me, I'm gonna empower myself with the knowledge to really understand like how gender works, and how oppression works, and how sexual violence right. works. So what was really exciting, like, so I continued to waitress. Mm-hmm. I continued to waitress until I got a job at a strip club as a waitress. And that was the exact semester when I started taking this class in women's studies called Sex Work, Trafficking, and Human mm-hmm. Rights. And in that class, at first when I was taking like the women's studies and I was starting to work at the strip club, and I was like, is this a problem? Like, can I really be a feminist and work at a strip right. club? And luckily this class was right at the beginning of the course. And one of the first things that she did was, part of the instruction was to have us go through the Lusty Lady documentary.
Yes. So,
Live Nude Girls Unite, and it's about the only unionized strip club in yes. the US and their fight for unionization. And after that, like the content of the class moves on to, you know, the difference between trafficking and mm-hmm. sex work, and that uplifting sex workers as a human rights issue.
Yes.
And I always remember my professor, Annalie Lepp, saying, like, a feminism that doesn't seek to understand sex work is no feminism at all. Mm. It's a working class reality, you know, and the way that people's identities intersect mean that they have various relationships to power. Different kinds of opportunities are available to people depending on their class privilege, their race privilege, etc. And really, and taking away like an opportunity when people have a limited field of opportunities, and women do have limited fields of opportunities, and women have limited fields of opportunity to make, you know, bank in an hour, that doesn't happen right. much. So if you take away one of those opportunities, say, and give and take people's autonomy away and take away their right to sell their services or their time, you're really doing them a disservice. And the best thing is to kind of uplift people with human rights and, you know, better disability benefits and childcare yeah. and better education and all of this kind of stuff.
Wow.
So,
yes. That's an amazing class. I will say that. Like, I'm so glad that they have those classes in university. I wish we had classes like that too. I know, like, we had probably a similar class to that too, where I went to SFU, Simon Fraser, and it was called Prostitution in Canada. But I wish I was able to get into that class because it was like always popular and always full. But really great that they're teaching yeah. this kind of stuff at the university and like college level. It's such a great time for, you know, people are really starting to critically think, I feel, at those ages, maybe even earlier nowadays, which I think is great.
Yep.
Quick question before we move on. So you were talking about the relationship between feminism and sex work, and I love this so much because I was also a fellow gender studies minor, so I understand. I'm curious too, because like a lot of people will say, yes, sex work is feminism. Absolutely. And I'm one of those people as well. What do you say to those people that think the opposite, that they don't think, again, that sex work is an empowering thing, is not a consenting thing, or even say to like SWERFs, sex worker, radical extreme feminists? What would you say to that? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I have some experience with the work myself, so I would probably begin by really facing it head on and saying like I agree, or I think wholeheartedly that I've made those choices. And like I said, those were made within a field of options. It's a privileged place to be able to say that everybody is victimized. In capitalism, all work is exploitative, period. Like, you're going to be using your labor, your efforts, your body to generate your income. And essentially, the only way that that works is if if the means of production are, you know, put us in control of our means of production.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
<our body. laughs> I do think that people are really privileged when they take that stance, and that they need to go back and unpack their own intersections and their own vantage mm-hmm. points. I was lucky enough to take part or to be present for Canada versus the provincial government of Ontario when we were doing our constitutional challenge
yeah.
last year.
Nice.
So so basically the Canadian Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform, which is a member group of 27, something like that. Member groups all across Canada. And these groups, of which Pierce is one of, These groups are sex worker rights and sex worker support organizations. So they have bonded together to create an alliance, and together that alliance takes down, takes law reform at its head. In September, we got the ruling that the government wasn't going to uphold sex workers' human rights and was going to uphold these sections of the criminal code that essentially criminalize buying sex, helping other sex workers work safely, all these other things. But some of the arguments that Tara Santini, our counsel, made were just, it's hard to get your head around. And you could tell that people in that courtroom, it was hard to get their head around, but I'm kind of repeating myself a bit, because what she had said, one of the things that she said was that most people in this courtroom don't know what it's like to have a limited field of options. And ideally, that's true. There was all these lawyers and students and everybody in their fancy garb and everything. And most people there, they come from a very privileged echelon of society. They don't know what it's like to have been born in poverty or to have hardship. And so when she said that, and she was saying again that if you take away one of these options, you're doing such a disservice to people. But not only that, like, everyone has agency. Everybody has autonomy and free will. And so if you say like, oh, you can't choose that, you know, it's really demeaning and condescending to say that someone can choose to work at a menial job, pimping out their body on a construction site, having a bad back, all sorts of problems. It's so they have, they're choosing that work, but we're not able to choose this work. That it's just really,
no, totally. I understand. But another, sorry, continue.
It's Tara Santini said was, she's so amazing. The other thing that she said was that consent has come so far since the Bedford case.
Yeah.
So consent legislation, consent talks about consent. It's all up and coming, right? And so in the last 10 years, sexual assault law has really recognized that everybody in Canada has a right to consent to or withdraw consent from sex and any aspect of sex at any time.
Yes.
That means the who, what, where, why, when, how, with what. You can say yes or no to at any time. But if you take money out of the equation, like, yes, everyone can consent to any aspect of sex and take anything out of it, and take away their consent at any point. But if money's involved, then that just nullifies that. That means that everybody in Canada has the right to consent except for sex workers.
And that is definitely not right. And thank you for the breakdown on that too. That was such a great answer. Also, if anyone does want to learn more about the Bedford case or the Canadian Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform, I'm like having to go through the acronyms. Please listen back. I think season 4 or season 3, I had Jen Clayman on from the Alliance. So feel free to listen in. Lots of big, that's a whole episode even in and of itself. But Ruby, we're going back to you. I love tangents and I'm really bad. I'm like, I want to know everything. But going back to this class you're taking at university, and also the same time you were also starting to waitress at a strip club, continue the story from there. Where did it take you? Did it kind of, you know, pivot your understanding, or tell us about what potential impact there was?
Sure. Well, it was, I remember, like, what I ended up doing was, like, focusing my whole gender studies, like, I don't know, discipline on the interplay between sex work and feminism. And there's a lot of literature out there, and that's great. I did find that, like, in real life, I was able, like, when I first started working at the strip club, I remember just it being really demystified, because just things like, you know, we used to, like, to look down on guys in the front row, for example, or be like, oh, they're, and it's all dark and shady. And like, when I ended up working there, it was not like that at all. Like, these people are the kindest and like are really like engaging you with like eye contact and being really generous as well. And while I was working at the strip club waitressing, I did end up dancing as well. But I also answered phones at a brothel or an escort agency. And I did that for like, I did both of those things for 15 years and they overlapped. Wow. And so I was sex work adjacent for a long time, and meanwhile working at Peers as well. And it was just really enlightening. I think sex workers are the most generous, most intelligent, kindest people I know. I just lift my hands to them. There's no end to the benefits of sex workers engaging in the work and also just being active members of our community. I think that we have a lot to share with the public at large. And like, that's kind of what the Peep Show is about. It's about demystifying sex work and enlightening the kind of opinion about it, and really bringing like a message like on the road and to different cities and like to people on the street, you know? So
I love that. I mean, that's such a great transitional point to talk about Peep Shows and to pivot to that kind of part of the conversation. Maybe before we get into your specific business, Ruby's Pop-Up Peep Show, but also like Ruby's Entertainment in general, maybe we can talk a little bit about like your own history that you know of when it comes to Peep Shows, and we can kind of go from there. And yeah, let's do it.
So I don't know that I could speak a lot about the full history of Peep Shows. You know, I did watch that documentary. Well, I've watched it a few times, and that was The Lusty Lady was essentially a Peep Show. But when I love Europe and I love Amsterdam, and I've been there lots of times. And when I was there in 2018 and 2019, I went to the Peep Show, and it was my inspiration. It was so cool. So when we did finally go into to see the Peep Show, and every seventh show is a full sex show, like a boy girl show, and it was kind of funny though because they were quite bored. They were doing do the thing, and then switch positions and do it from this way a bit, and switch positions and do it from that way a bit. And I was like, they were sort of yawning, but you know, there's like that's even that in itself is kind of like there's power for the performer, you know, like you can be like, sometimes it used to bother me when people be like, oh well, I'm fine with stripping just as long as it looks like they're enjoying it. Like if they look bored, or if they like, I can't handle that, or if they look like they're not enjoying it, like, oh my goodness, it's like, why do we need to click all these boxes for you? Like, sometimes sex work is mundane. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
From that, like, format, like the way that they had that Peep Show set up, my original intention was to try to make something like an installation. I don't know if I mentioned this already. But like,
I haven't mentioned that. Please, yeah.
I'm happy. Like it's, I just imagined like I'm not a carpenter or anything, but it could be built really simply in that it's basically an asterisk, like it's a hexagon or an octagon, like depending if it's six or eight booths, but it's basically built. There's a circular stage in the middle, and then there's just this asterisk kind of built around like around it, so you could almost have it on its side, and it almost, and then it's hard to explain, but like you could build it so it was like these little walls that once you fit it, put it up, then they all fan out. But you know, during COVID, a friend of mine had an idea, because the installation was going to be a hard thing to navigate and to find the space to host it in. And so it wasn't my idea. It was a good friend of mine who thought, what about a trailer, a mobile thing? And I was like, you're genius. Ah. Yes. So he was like, if you can find the money, that I can make that happen. So
oh my gosh. So that's how it began.
Yeah. So then I found a grant that was, well, I'd actually originally started by, looking for arts grants and art money to do it. But the grants at the time for COVID were around existing works, not new works. But then there was a business grant, Small Business BC, and it was essentially the same grant that built all the little patios. outside. And so
I think Patio Pilot Project. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So that was the grant program. They basically offered $10,000 to $15,000 in order to build something to help your business be socially distant. And I thought it applied, but I wasn't sure if they were going to go for it. But I remember I took a lot of time to build the application, and I have, like, with my business, I have my taxes, I do my taxes and I keep everything in order. So it wasn't hard. And I thought, well, you know, but worst thing they can say is no. And I remember I really erred on the side of, like, burlesque, we do retirement parties, we do bachelorette parties.
Right, like, right.
Strip shows and, like, girl on girl duos. Like, I didn't, like, put that in the application, but I remember I got a message on my phone, my work phone, which, like, on my answer machine for my work phone, it says, "Thanks for calling Ruby Entertainments, et cetera, et cetera. If this is a stripper emergency, hang up and call this other number." So when I got a message on that, like, "This is Catherine so-and-so with the government of BC business or whatever." And then I was like, "Oh, you can give me a call back about your application." I was like, "Oh, like, the gig is up. Like, they know what's up, you know?" And so I was kind of like, but I was like, whatever. I called her and I was like, "Hey, it's just me calling about the thing or whatever." And I imagine they got the same application over and over again to build those patios. And they must have, when that came across the desk, must have been like, "Oh, this is, you know, different." But she said, "You know, you clicked a box this box that said your business is tourism related," which it is, because people come to Vancouver Island to do their weddings and stags and bachelorette parties, right? So, and that you, and this other box that said you would employ contractors or work with contractors that you had worked with before the pandemic. And I was like, "Oh yeah, 100%. So she said, "Because you click those boxes, you get an extra 5%, but you need to ask for it particularly, like, in the budget." So, because I had just budgeted for
$10,000,
like, "So you need to, you know, you need to make up another $10,000." She goes, "Maybe you need a stripper pole. Maybe you need pasties." And I was like, "Maybe I do." So then, yeah, I got approved. It took a minute to for it to come to fruition. Like, it was hard to find a trailer with the budget that I had and everything. But in the end, I got a $15,000 grant. They did tax me on it, so I think that was $1,500 off. But anyways, then I spent half on a brand new utility trailer and then half on the original design and aluminum wrap.
Oh my gosh, Ruby, this is incredible. Like, it just sounds, I mean, obviously sounds like a lot of hard work. And I know we were just talking earlier off the air, just talking about how daunting even, like, grant writing can be for small businesses, and just getting your business that something so unique and also within our intersection of sex work too. There's so many layers here which can really complicate starting a business. So I would like to know, what part of that was probably the hardest part for you? Was it actually, like, building the trailer? Was it just the grant writing process? And, you know, applications can be very daunting for people. What about, like, for yourself, if you can recall?
Well, I think that it's the hardest part has been after creating it, and you're not going to believe it, but the hardest part is actually people to look. And it's kind of sad. So I was like, "This is an amazing idea.
Yeah.
We're going to be lined up around the block for this. This is so cool." And because we live in kind of a conservative culture, I guess you'd say, people are, and maybe the word people, it incites some kind of imagery that people are afraid of. They think they don't know what kind of weird stuff they might see in there. So it's been about, the hardest part has been about pivoting the vision in order to relay it to the public in a way that helps them embrace what it really is. And what it really is an art project that's seeking to humanize sex workers and the sex workers' experience, but through this playful avenue. And that's essentially what it is. Like, it's not a for-profit venture. It will be hopefully one day, but for now it's not. And like, that's totally fine. My goal is to go across the country with it and like to pop up at all these sex worker organizations across the country doing little events, carnivals, in order to, yeah, humanize our experience and like let everybody take a load off. And life's so serious, and COVID just screwed everything up, and people need this element of fun and play, you know. That's like, I sincerely believe it. And so it's been hard sometimes to be like, hey, because like my job now with the Peep Show is barking. It's called barking, which is like, step right up, step right up. This is the world's first traveling peep show. Come and see what you will. Blah, blah, blah. All these kind of things. Made possible by a grant. Da, 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 da. Right. I'm just nonstop talking outside the box in order to let people know what's going on so that they can come up to peek. Like, what we've been doing so far is really accessible peep show. We ask for donations, so we're not charging anything. We ask for a donation with a minimum suggested donation of $10. And like, I sometimes will say on the microphone, it's cheaper than a head of lettuce, or it was when groceries were crazy.
So true.
Depending on which show we're doing or which show we're collaborating with, we do save a portion of the profits or the money for Peers, the organization that I work for. We're saving. It's not a lot of money, but it's growing steadily, and it's money that we're going to be using for a dental fund for Sacred, which is the Indigenous sex workers group at Peers. So we feel really good about that. Just inviting people, trying to make it not too scary. It's been the hardest part in it, and it tells me that the work is really needed. Right, like that. I thought that people would be like, "Oh, this is so cool!" And like, guys, it took me so much time and effort and money to do this, and all I'm doing it for is for you to just like live in the moment and have like a piece of joy right now. Just come on, step right up. It's okay. Part of the problem is the peep show word, but I'm not going to change that. I'm gonna work with it. You know?
No, I don't think you should.
Anything can be a peep. Really, like, you could have a peep show with your eyes closed, with somebody speaking a story to you. Like, a peep show can be really anything. So I'm kind of like rolling with that.
Oh yeah, no, I think it's smart though too, because like, yes, there can be a lot of stigma that comes with certain words, but like, I think it's really important for you to take ownership of that. And as you mentioned, it just goes hand in hand with your mission and your vision of Ruby's Pop-Up Peep Show as well. I want to go back and talk about the response, the public response that you were saying, and how that has been the most difficult part of your business so far. Where do you think that comes from? Because obviously, like, one, we just mentioned it, stigma that comes with the word itself. The word is one thing. But also, like, do you think it's just people are not curious? It's still the whole taboo-ness that is related. All three, more things. Ruby, what do you think?
I mean, in Europe, I guess Belgium is the most recent to decriminalize sex work. And I think that Europe has, like, a more welcoming attitude towards all sorts of sexy entertainment. So I think that where we're geographically situated is holding us back, and, you know, that we're like a British colony maybe, and we're alongside the US. Like, I think maybe those things are helping to contribute. And I think each pop-up we've done, so I've done about, I guess, 20 to 25 pop-ups, and each one's different. Each one has a different audience and a different reaction. Some pop-ups are like, we did just for fun. We did like a parking lot in Victoria once, that was like alongside, like adjacent to a music, like an outdoor music festival, to see what we could get. And we got a lot of couples at that one, and couples love it. Yeah. Right. Our best gig was an event in Victoria. It's called Drag Ball, and it's on July 1st. it kicks off Pride in Victoria. It's a 25-year annual event that's in a memorial baseball game for people who lost their lives in the AIDS crisis. And it's a baseball game that's between drag kings and drag queens. And it's a like family-friendly event. It's a Pride event. It's a picnic. And it's attended by 4,000 people. Mm-hmm. It was our best gig because it like that was the audience. It, an LGBTQ to plus, you know, an LGBT crowd was definitely our most accepting. And what I really liked about that one, like part of my shtick is that the Peep Show is it's empowering for individuals. It's great for couples, and it's good for, yes, even families. I truly believe that, you know, if kids are watching porn at 9 years old and like learning all the wrong things on their own, and we just need to demystify bodies a bit. So in with that event, there was kids who came up to the show, and I'll just let you know that like when, first of all, the Peep Show in public, it's a PG Peep Show. So there's no extremely lewd stuff going on in there. There will sometimes be tassels, and there sometimes will be bare nipples. But you know, I believe that like our chests as women are just part of our bodies. Those aren't even nudity, is what I believe. So but there'd be nothing like bottomed out. But when someone's who's underage wants to come and peek, it's all about consent. So we first I'll check in with the parent, like I'll find their parent. And check in with them, let them know that like, this is, you know, this is what I'm doing. It's PG, you know, it's about demystifying bodies and like reintroducing an element of play, society, et cetera. And then I'll also check in with the performer and just let them know, like there's a kid that's going to come up. Are you okay with that? And it's really wonderful because the performers end up doing, they do more arms in their performances and less twerk. Yeah. So every performance
modifying things.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll never be two exact same performances in the Peep Show anyways. It's just like it's almost not possible. But for those ones in particular, the performer and like the kids love it. And they like my one girlfriend, like she had to like tear her little girl away crying. Like, of course, you're looking in. So when you look inside the Peep Show, basically it's a trailer, right? That's done up like a sexy circus caravan. Mm-hmm. The two back doors open and there's a false wall in the back there. And that false wall has like life-size keyholes. And they're done in two rows of keyholes. So you've got one that's wheelchair accessible, one that's kind of the median height of a lot of people, and then one that's quite tall. People can peek in pairs or threes. It's kind of like crouching around. So it's quite an intimate experience. Also behind those keyholes is like a black fringe curtain. So you kind of, in order to look, it's really up to you how much you want to see. Like you can pull the curtains apart and really look, or you can just kind of see from the back. But inside, we've painted it matte black, like flat black, and then you know a couple mirror panels, but then like groovy lighting and a laser in there, and then it's just like a dancer in a box. And the kids, when they look in and see this the beautiful girl in a tutu with glitter and rainbow hair, like who doesn't want to see this, you know? And it's just really simple,
it's fun.
Joy. Yeah, and so that was our best gig. And you know, like I said, different every booking
Love
is
it.
Or every experience is different, and then the audience is different. It's kind of about us pivoting and adapting to it, but it's still like a blast. Like we learn, like every single Peep Show pop-up has been a success in that we learn so much. We haven't really had any problems. We haven't had anybody, except for this one guy one time, it was like, that's awful, women shouldn't be taking off their clothes, and he was kind of going off, and I was like, you are not our audience, sir. And that was it. Yeah. That's the only time I had a problem. And it might happen, and I'm
that's good.
I'll welcome it because there's no such thing as bad publicity.
No, totally. And I think that's great too, and especially coming from that perspective of demystifying bodies, because kind of going back to what you said to comparing like North American or like European versus European cultures, very different and very accepting of bodies. Like, for example, like they're really open with nudity and like nude beaches and just bodies in general, like body acceptance, I think is really great. And here we're just taught to cover up all the time, and that, you know, this is a private thing, and that kind of whole attitude is very much a thing here in North America. So I think it's really, really great that you're able to channel your peep show this way. I think it's so important too, and it makes it accessible and inclusive for kids as well, because I mean, you already jumped ahead and you already answered my question. So I was like, what can we expect in the peep show? But you've said everything already there, which is awesome. But I mean, talking about and also, I'm kind of like going all over the place here, but I'm just commenting on everything that you said here, but also just thinking about the accessibility and including folks that might be in a wheelchair and stuff too. Like, I feel like you've thought of everything. Just very impressive, Ruby.
Thanks. Well, one of the things that I thought of when we first had the original, like, so went to Amsterdam, all that stuff, mm-hmm. came back, and we had a Red Umbrella Day march, December 17th, the International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers. In Victoria, we call it Red Umbrella Day, and we have a big event every Red Umbrella Day. And that one in particular, we had burlesque in City Hall, which was really cool. Afterwards, a few of us were hanging at my place, and I was bringing up this idea of a peep show, and we were just rolling with it and talking about, like, what else could you put in there, you know? Different tableaus, different satires, different comments on society, right? My boss at the time, she joked that we could put her in there writing for grants. Just like, good, look at here. At this woman writes for grants for peers or whatever. But it's like it being a space it calls attention and focus to whatever. But what was I going to say? Oh, but what I really enjoyed, because I worked in a strip club and I have a business that caters to stags, and I know that like the business of stripping is quite superficial. Don't hate the player, hate the game, mm-hmm. right? It is what it is. We live in a heteronormative, Eurocentric kind of culture that's really focused on ideals of beauty that are thin and white, etc. So my vision with the peep show is to kind of, and I don't know how this will sound, but kind of like to wrestle sexiness away from strippers. Not really, but I mean, I still employ like strippers.
No, I get you.
Especially now because I'm just getting it off the road. So I needed to kind of to use people that I already know that I work well with. But my goal is to really diversify sexy entertainment. Like I'm going to put a casting call out soon, and it's really like, I'm looking for polished performers. It doesn't matter of like your age or your weight or your the color of your skin or your ability, like anything. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a joy of performing and you want to connect in this intimate way with the public, like I'm all for it. So, and I like that I'm not being too micromomagey about what you do in the peep show. It can be choreographed. Doesn't have to be choreographed. And you can wear don't wear black because it's hard to see. But other than that, what you want, this is a collaborative project and about, you know, maybe not wrestling away sexiness from strippers, but really to complexify what sexiness can be and to help push that, like literally like push it as a vehicle of change.
Oh yeah. No, I understand what you're saying, Ruby. Like I, as a dancer myself, I understand that world very well, and how, like, you know, there needs to be not a separation, but like there needs to be maybe a redefinition or reimagination of what sexy can be, because sexy can mean so many things in so many different ways. And that doesn't just mean like wearing little clothing or a certain body type. Like that could just mean like how I'm really feeling inside. It could be a material, a piece of clothing, or like a fabric. In like silky something, I don't know, like that can, to me, can relate to sexiness. Like it's very subjective is what I'm trying to say. So I'm really glad that you're able to challenge that, because I think more people need to kind of look at things from a different perspective. And it doesn't always just need to be in one box. You know, there's room for all of us in there. So
it's quite burlesque-y, I guess. And like, I don't know if I already said this because I say this all the time, but burlesque means to make fun of. Like, the word burlesque, it literally means to make fun of. It was a working class art form in the 1800s. It's an art form that employs satire and social commentary. And so the Peep Show is burlesquing stripping, maybe. although it's also, like I said, like a lot of who I've been using so far is the people who dance for Ruby Entertainments, because we already work well together, and I know, but like I know, we know well how to work together. But one of the like when we were at Taboo, the Naughty But Nice sex show, that was an interesting endeavor. It was successful in some ways, but financially not so much. What was really great about Taboo was that part of my plan since starting the Peep Show was to make it like a pop-up carnival, and to do so because it'll be like a traveling show. It will engage like all of the community, and that it'll really, like, because I've been realizing that people are so shy to look or maybe to be seen looking.
Yes.
But to kind of incorporate this carnival around where the Peep Show is the centerpiece of this like miniature carnival, that'll help soften the image of the Peep Show, or soften like the blow of it, I guess. So when we went to Taboo, we brought like the vintage popcorn maker, big vintage popcorn maker. They had I needed to tell the Canada Place every time we were going to make popcorn, because they had to disable the fire alarms. learning curves. But we also built there's so much learning. We also built a kaleidoscope photo booth, which is essentially a tube of mirrors in a triangle where the phone and light are at one end and then you're at the other end. And when you take a photo, it looks like you're in a kaleidoscope. So that's kind of cool. And then
is really cool.
Yeah. Then we had a girl doing like airbrushing. She did this airbrushing like on people. And then my girlfriend, the ineffable Greta Grindhouse, built and womaned the motorboat booth. So it was. It's never been done too. That's just what we do. We do stuff that's never been done. It's a size like box, which is covered in crushed velvet, where just this is visible, and then people come up in motorboat. And even then, people were shy. People were really shy in a motorboat, but it still got us some attention. The best time was when these three furries motorboated, and I was so enamored with the experience, I didn't get it on film. But so now we're traveling. Now we're trying to travel with this whole like carnival. Like the next element is like I want to bring in games, you know, games and prizes, just like flesh out this fun carnival vibe that kind of like lets everybody live in the moment and helps facilitate the Peep Show.
Oh my gosh, you have so much on the up and up, Ruby. Like, it just sounds like you're really, which I love, you're really, really just leaning into this whole carnival aspect of it. And there's so many things you could do with that. And like everything that you're telling me right now, it's like, oh my God, this is so freaking cool. And I'm so sad to have missed you guys at Taboo, because I was like, I was also performing and running around and at the other booth where I was working. But it sounds like you really got your hands full, but also like, one, you're learning a whole ton about pivoting and just like learning how to manage this business that no one's ever done before. So it's a lot of navigating blindly, but it sounds like you know what you're doing, I think. That's awesome.
No, I'm really grateful. Like, people who work with me Like, I can't do this. Is not a one woman show at all. Like, I've been in the peep show like twice. I'd like to be in there more, but nobody wants to do the barking, so that's fine. But it's like it's a whole team effort. And like with Taboo, for example, like there was four of us that went over there, and like, we're not making money at this yet. Like, it's really a labor of love. But it feels like social change, and it's very artistic, and it's very performance based, and it's just also just like really living in the moment, and it's brightening people's lives, and we can see that. But I'm like, my team is like amazing. Greta Grindhouse, she does all my driving, and she parks the trailer, which is like a total nightmare. All my other dancers as well that help push this forward. And in Victoria and beyond, we went to the Sex Workers Assembly, the National Assembly last May in Edmonton, and we drove there. We
Oh.
drove the trailer, and we brought the peep show, and
Oh
we
my
parked
God.
the lot in the back of the conference. And yeah, it's
Wow.
I feel like it's asking a lot, but people are happy to do so. I'm really grateful, and I do what I can to like make them feel valued. But I still am like, wow, I can't believe you guys are on this ride with me. So thank you so much to my people. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Aww.
Something else
That's
to share.
awesome. And again, this is such a great. Yeah, like what else? I mean, what have I missed? Is there more?
Well,
I feel like there's more.
the more the thing is that everyone goes, well, how can this happen? How is this legal? Right? And so
Right.
I'll tell you how. Well, in Canada, nudity is largely sanctioned by liquor laws. So, in order to have a strip club, you need to have a certain liquor license. And in Victoria, for example, they don't offer any of those new ones, and you have to get an old one grandfathered. And those are all defunct. We have no strip clubs left in Victoria, but nudity is sanctioned by liquor laws. So there's that. And we don't serve booze, and we're not anywhere near it. So there's that. It's burlesque, and it's not completely nude. So there's that as well. We're not actually charging admission, asking for donations, saving part of that for asking for donations and saving part of that for nonprofits, kind of help that level of it. But lastly, the most interesting thing that I've learned is that it's just parking. Have you paid for your parking? Have
Oh
you
my God.
parking permit?
Yeah.
That's the number one thing that is my
Right.
job now. It's
I
like,
didn't even think about
yeah.
that.
So that's kind of what I learned. It's like, it's the municipalities are really worried about, have you paid for your parking? Do you have the proper permit? So I just go through those avenues, and there you go. And otherwise, it's a mobile theater unit that people that isn't like out there for all to see. Like, you have to step up to look inside. Like, it really does take effort to look inside, right? So yeah, that's how I've managed and shimmied and shaked through the red tape, I guess.
I love it. And I'm glad you're gonna bring that up in terms of legality. But yeah, like, I mean, I experienced it at the Lit conference in October and it was super cool. So I was like, what is this? It sounds so cool. You guys were parked out right outside the club for the burlesque after party, which was awesome. And I was like super stoked. It's a long ass day that day, but I was like, nope, I'm committed. I'm gonna be here and I wanna see this peep show. And that was a really great it was a really great way to kick off like the last part of that evening. So that was awesome. And I like the trailer itself was beautiful, by the way. Can I just say that? It's absolutely beautiful work that's on the outside, inside, everywhere. And you've done such a great job. And like I just can't wait to see where this is gonna take you. And you're kind of like reinventing the peep show, which I'm really excited about. And hopefully, and actually maybe this is the question I'll ask you. Like, do you ever think that peep shows will make a comeback in whatever form it's gonna take?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I mean, if they do, so like the work that I'm doing now, I envision that, in a couple years, it's gonna open up a bit because of the work that we're doing now. Peep show is making a comeback. For like, in my hope for my peep show is that it will do public service work. Like it's doing, it'll go across the country. It will bring attention to the rights of sex workers and demystify sexiness and bodies and all that, but also that we can actually use it for stag parties, and we can have like lay down some plastic in there and have girl on girl squirt shows. Like, that's what I want. Like, wild, wet, crazy.
Yeah.
Of course. Like, there's nothing, there's no shame in my game. This is a sex work business. This is an operation. Fine. But on the other, on the flip side, there's a public service aspect to it. You know, part of me is nervous that, that the mobile show is going to like take off and people will like take my idea and like benefit and whatever. But I mean, I can't really stop that.
Going back to you, I guess, like, maybe it's a good time because we were also mentioning about social enterprising and also just talking about the money of the funds. Where do those donations go? You said it goes back to Peers, which is awesome, which is a nonprofit organization based in Victoria. I know we were talking off air about some other projects you have upcoming. I think maybe now is the time to talk about that, which is also social enterprise related.
Yeah.
But yeah, take it away.
Well, social enterprise is really exciting because not many people know about this this third option in the capitalist model. Capitalism means that you can have for-profit endeavors, not-for-profit endeavors, and then this third option, which is a social enterprise. And that's where you fund a not-for-profit with profits from a business. So, for example, with Peers, we're looking into some social enterprise. Although I don't know that they want me to talk about that. So maybe we won't talk about Peers. So going back, I'm a founding member of a really exciting collective called the Carnal Arts Collective, together with Susan Davis, who's a righteous sex work activist in Vancouver, and Velvet Steel as well. So the three of us are heading this arts collective, and we're just looking at getting public funding to put on the first ever Carnal Arts Fair, which will be next May. I think we're hoping to do it at the Penthouse. We're going to bring the carnival. Yeah, so with Velvet Steel and Susan Davis, we're heading the Carnal Arts Festival, which is going to be a one-day festival in May of 2025 that highlights sex worker artists. So we're inviting sex workers of all artistic mediums, be that performance, poetry, painting, drawing, beading, sculpture, projections, any kind of art medium. And the art doesn't have to be sexy or erotic. It just needs to be done by a current or former sex worker. And our intention is to elevate our experience, humanize our experience, and really connect with the public, inspiring meaningful connections and conversations about stigma and criminalization, and hopefully generating buzz and income about what awesome artists sex workers can be. So we're going to have a day-to-night event in May. Yeah. And so keep your ears peeled for that. It's called the Carnal Arts Festival, and we'll be the, and we're the Carnal Arts Collective. There'll be a website up soon and everything. It'll be, I think we got the domain, carnalartscollective.com.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes below as well. But in addition to this, Ruby, where can we all find you in case anyone wants to book the Peep Show? If anyone wants to check out any upcoming events, please let us know. Where can we all find you?
Yeah, so we're going to be in Victoria popping up June 1st. We're going to do a spring fair carnival. So we're going to have like hay bales and games and prizes and all of the accoutrement, be it the motorboat booth, the kaleidoscope photo booth, all of that stuff. It's going to be at Wheelies, which is a motorcycle cafe. So we're going to do that June 1st in Victoria. You can always contact me through my email, info@rubyentertainments.com, if you wanted to book the Peep Show. It's kind of sliding scale based. My goal is to pay the people who perform, but just to get the word out. Mm-hmm. So but, you know, having said that, there is a cost affiliated with bringing it somewhere, be that parking permits or travel.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's about it for now.
I I love it. All those links are also in the show notes. We're going to plug the date at WeLeads as well for the Spring Air Festival as well. So make sure if you are in the area, please go take a peep, I guess. Take a peep at the peep show. For everyone else that's listening, it is new episodes every single Sunday dropping at midnight Pacific Standard Time. If you want to get in touch with myself, you can do so on X, which is under Stripped by Sia, on Instagram, which is under Stripped by Sia Podcast. Again, my Patreon, if you want to donate to the show financially, you can do that with patreon.com/strippedbysia. And if you actually want to be on the show, season 7 is actually coming up real soon. And I am looking for new topics and new guests to cover for season 7. So you can do that on strippedbysia.com. There's a little contact page there. You can go ahead and pitch your topic of choice, something that you feel you would be the expert at. And I would love to hear from you because I'm actively recruiting for that season at the moment. So yeah, that's pretty much it for today. But Ruby, thank you so much for sharing your awesome endeavor. And everyone should go experience Ruby's Peep Show at least once. It is really freaking cool. And again, we just need more of you and more of the Peep Show everywhere. So thank you for the work that you do, Ruby.
Sex worker rights are human rights. Thank you, Sia.
Hells yes. Thank you. Listening to Stripped by Sia, hosted, produced, and edited by Steph Sia, music by Ted D, graphic design by Maria Bellandarama, and photography by Ian Dabrin.